Hello, Sam.
Hi, Simon. It's your face.
How does this work again? I can't remember.
I think you say things and I say things. And then
that's right.
We say things, I think.
We talk on the internet once every 2 years. And then...
It totally didn't take us half an hour to remember how to set up all of the things and get the microphones working and figure out the software.
Absolutely not. I think what happened was in our last episode, I set you such a ridiculously difficult challenge that you were just like, fuck this, I'm out. And then...
Yeah, I was like, actually, is friendship with Simon even worth it to me anymore if he's going to set me such ridiculous challenges?
Yes, this one's going to take 90 months to resolve. Stand by.
Yeah, exactly. So actually, the challenge to recap last year on Take Back the Day, Simon challenged Sam to do a very simple challenge, actually, which was find a game we could play together on the internet. Sam then proceeded to not do that and feel increasingly guilty about having not doing that, which led Sam to avoid even having normal hangouts with Simon because she was in the guilt spiral. I don't know if anyone else is familiar with the guilt spiral of, oh no, I haven't done this thing, so let me just ignore it entirely. Yes, and then we did that for 19 months. But we did eventually play a game, but it was very unsuccessful because it was just I had no idea what was going on. So we played Hearthstone, tomato, tomato, which is kind of Magic the Gathering-y on the internet. And I did play Magic the Gathering as a teenager and liked it a lot. So I thought this will be fine. But it turns out it does take a little while for one to learn rules for a new game.
Well, I threw you into the deep end with the battleground mode of Hearthstone, which is...
such a jerk.
I am a jerk. I'm an asshole. But it's super fun because you kind of play in a pool of eight people and you're like not in a team, but you're both just there battling it out with each other and eight people. But it's super confusing when you first play it. However, in my defense, you did throw my challenge ball back at me on the spot and I had to come up with something. And that was like the game I had open on my desktop. So...
No, it was actually a great challenge and it was a very sweet challenge. And it absolutely wasn't a challenge that should have been as difficult as it turned out to be for me. And that I think is worth reflecting on. Like, because I think in general last year, I had a lot of issues similar to this where I had these things on my to-do list that could have been quite easy and joyful to do. But for some reason, they kind of accumulated all of these bad feelings of guilt and, you know, this has to be a hard thing. Like all of these things became much bigger in my mind. And then I ended up kind of not doing a whole bunch of things that, A, I kind of needed to do, but more importantly, maybe I could have reframed as being joyful play things, but they kind of become a bit of a infinite to-do list, right? And it was interesting to reflect on this challenge actually for me because it is illustrative of how a lot of my things, what the things I wanted to do last year ended up feeling and then ended up not happening because they all ended up, I don't know, being framed as kind of things I needed to do properly, I think. We like ended up playing Hearthstone. But then I still felt like we hadn't actually done the challenge because I was like, yeah, but we kind of didn't get into it really. And we should really I should do something more. And then I started researching best online co-op games 2023. But then obviously I have different games consoles to you. And then it just became much bigger and more complicated in my head than it needed to be at all for a joyful challenge, which is let's play a game, you know? And I think that was a fascinating insight into a particular way that my brain is often really mad, actually, and lets me down. Yeah.
Well, it's super interesting because I feel like last year, which was the year of our Lord 2023, for those of you listening in the future, it seemed to be thematic. Like last year was a very difficult year for a lot of people. I was actually listening to another podcast where they were talking about the latent effects of the pandemic. And they were like, trauma isn't something that you shed in the moment. Like, there's long-term effects. And actually, this one therapist at the time predicted that 3 years after the pandemic is when we'd finally start to see the world coming out of it. Because she was like, it's going to take a long time for us as a species, planet, whatever, to get over this thing that we've all been through that was fairly massive. Maybe there's also a little bit of latent, like, playing games and hanging out online that way was something we did in the pandemic out of necessity.
definitely.
And so go back into that space was like, you know, there might have been some underlying processes.
Yeah. I definitely think that's part of it. Because, I mean, we hung out on the internet playing games a lot during COVID, and it was life-saving. Well, we say during COVID. COVID obviously still exists, but during the lockdowns, right? And I think you're right. 2023 was definitely the first, like, post-lockdown year for many of us. And definitely that's getting online and playing, particularly, like, Don't Starve Together, all the games that I played a lot during lockdown. That now just feels like being back in lockdown. And it is tricky because for me, moving countries coincided with getting locked in my house for 2 years. So all of those things were ways for me, they were lifelines back to home and to my friends. And I didn't have friends here yet. Like, it was impossible to make friends. But then, you know, coming out of the lockdowns, so much of my big challenge to myself was I need to get into the meat space and I need to embed myself in communities here. And it's hard to kind of hold both of those energies, like still looking after my lifelong friendships and, you know, my friend family, who I obviously still deeply love and care for. But also, you know, getting back into life a little bit and getting off the internet. Those things are definitely some of that, Simon. Yeah.
That's all righteous and makes sense. One thing I have been thinking about as well is, you know, all of the things we did in lockdown because it was lockdown. So, for example, I had dinner dates with our friend Robin, who lives in Berlin. And so we would literally FaceTime each other, cook a meal together, sit down and eat a meal like over FaceTime. And it was delightful. And I'm like, Well, now the pandemic's over, but I'm still in Cape Town. Robin's still in Berlin. Why don't we do these things anymore? Like, why aren't Sam and I hanging out online? And, you know, besides for your meat space requirements, like all of these things we did in lockdown that made a lot of sense at the time because our favorite humans were far away. It's like, they kind of still make sense. Why aren't we doing them?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you maintained any of those sort of habits that you picked up during lockdown?
Not a single one. Except for loving being at home in my underpants. That has not changed. The pandemic had no impact on it, amplified it, and that's still me.
Yeah. a lot of stuff does feel tainted. Like even things that were very joyful. Like, I mean, obviously, the one for me that's been interesting is that my partner and I got deep into growing vegetables. Like, we had an allotment and we had so many vegetables growing. And then we would, you know, we were essentially like 16th century peasants. You know, we spent a lot of time working the fields and then pickling things from our garden and making preserves and, you know, making hot sauces. It was very wholesome and ridiculous. Matt still has kind of, that's persisted for him. Like, he still wants to grow a bunch of tomatoes. We've lost our allotment when we moved, but so he's now started building these big, like, hydroponic contraptions all over our flat. And I just, my body physically recoils when he wants me to help him grow things. I'm like, nope, that's a pandemic thing. Absolutely no interest in growing vegetables anymore. It's poison to me. It's like when you eat one, or you like drink one Sterry Stumpy that's gone sour, and now you can never smell a Sterry Stumpy again. Like, vegetables dead to me, the growing thereof.
Yeah. The pandemic giveth and the pandemic taketh away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, here we are in 2024, still kicking ass. Sorry, you were saying it's interesting though.
Well, I mean, I think games, I have been thinking a lot about games in general also as a way of building friendships. And I have been playing a lot of games in the meat space with other people as a way to make friends in London. And it's been very effective. And I think games are just great like that. Because I think, you know, I think the problem that with my framing about how to make friends historically was the idea that you have to become friends with people because you find people who you click with, like you find your people. And then it's, you know, it's like the search for love, you know, you find the one and then you click and you have all the same interests and all the same values. And then, you know, magical friendship ensues from there. Mm. And actually the older I get, the more I'm like, nah, it's way simpler than that. It's actually just about clocking a bunch of time together. Like you do have to have some basic similar values, but beyond that, if you just hang out enough, you develop a whole bunch of similarities. Like you develop a shared language, shared history, and you'll become friends with the people around you. So you actually just need a mechanism to clock a bunch of time with people, and games are a great way to do that.
That makes sense. And they're
fun. Games are great. Yeah.
Look, there is something to be said for quality over quantity, but yeah, there's, you know, just FaceTime is how you build this, this shared language together. So what are some of the games you've been playing? Let's do lists.
Ooh, lists. I signed up for this fitness club that takes place throughout London, well, throughout the UK, but not mostly southern England. It's this thing called Rabble, and essentially it's PE for adults. So they play games like last night we played dodgeball for an hour, and you play like capture the flag. A lot of these, I don't know, school PE games. So it's kind of sneakily like a HIIT workout. But you don't feel the fact that you're doing a workout because you are very focused on trying to get a ball from another person.
We
played netball recently. Yeah, it's so fun. And it's so funny because, you know, I was very proud of the fact that I managed to bunk every single PE class from grade 10 to matric. It was my greatest high school achievement. Like I hated PE in high school. But, you know, playing games with people physically is actually really, really fun. So that's been one recently. I have been playing, I recently played a game, you know, Matt, what's his name? The guy from the Oatmeal. He makes a bunch of board games now.
Yes, something. I can't remember his name. It'll come to me in a moment. But yes, the Oatmeal. Incredible.
Anyway, he's a cartoonist.
Yeah.
He's great. I've played quite a few of his games, and they're good party games because they're very easy to learn, unlike Hearthstone.
Yeah. So these games are Exploding Kittens. There's the Unicorns one.
Bears versus Babies.
That's right.
The one that I've been playing recently that I think is actually his best game as a game is Neanderthal Poetry. So it's a little bit like Code Names meets 30 Seconds. So it's sort of like you're having to describe a word, but you can only use monosyllabic words. What makes it fun is that if anyone breaks the rules, there's this big inflatable club and you bonk someone on the head when they get the rules wrong, which just like really elevates the game. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Those are the highlights. I didn't actually know about that one. So that's Neanderthal Poetry.
Neanderthal Poetry. It's really fun. Okay. And the other game recently that was very fun, I went away with some friends, some like new nascent friends, over New Year's, which was really lovely. And I ran a game of Honey Heist. Which is, it's basically like a tabletop role-playing one-off. So it's, imagine like Dungeons and Dragons, but it's a scenario designed to be played once, and it's designed to be played for people who have never role-played before. It's like this very easy thing. All the rules fit on one A4 piece of paper. You can design your character and run a whole scenario in like 2-3 hours, which for, you know, a role-playing game is very, very quick.
Yeah.
And the premise is that you are trying to commit a heist that is very complicated and involves a lot of perfectly timed things, like an Ocean's 11 type movie, except you are all bears, basically, and you're at HoneyCon trying to steal some honey. It's very fun. Amazing. Very easy. You can find all the rules on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can use it for any. So if I got it right, Honey Heist is the campaign and Rabble's the system that you're playing it on, kind of like the rule set.
Oh, these are totally unrelated things. Sorry, I'm just telling you a whole list of all my favorite game-related things recently.
Sorry, Rabble's the PE thing. PE for grown up. So Honey Heist is its own campaign and system.
It's its own campaign and system. One-off. Entire little universe of bear heisting. It's so fun
because
you just need like a normal dice.
There's another rule set that I can't remember that's probably very similar, that's open-ended, so you can use it for any campaign. And again, for people who are intrigued by tabletop role-playing like Dungeons and Dragons but Dungeons and Dragons is too technical and there are too many dice with sharp edges that you might step on, etc. And so the system as well is like, you just need a dice and some paper and somebody who can kind of tell the story act as sort of a narrator, and then off you go. And it's a hell of a lot of fun.
I think the system you're talking about is FU, which is, I think, Free Universe.
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of them, actually. And the cool thing with tabletop role-playing is you can kind of adjust the you can notch up the difficulty based on, like, you know, what you want. It can be as simple as like just storytelling and not even dice, to like a simple rule set through all the way to, like, you know, the latest D&D rule set, which is whatever, I think it's on its fifth edition or whatever. And it's super fun.
Magical. Have you been playing any fun games recently?
Not really. I've been playing work, and it's sometimes it's fun. There are other people involved. There are definitely rules, as I'm learning.
The consequences are go to jail, go directly to jail.
I still play way too much Hearthstone Battlegrounds, which is absolute crack. And if you have not gone down that very deep, dark, and dangerous rabbit hole, then best stay away. but not much besides that, actually.
Do you still play Minecraft with the boys?
We had a realm, we had a realm that and it was actually my fault. I just didn't spend enough time on it. So that's kind of fallen by the wayside. But they also, you know, kids have all the time. So, you know, they go from one thing to the other and, you know, we'll put 20 hours of playtime into something that would take me 2 years to replicate. So no, not so much. What we have started doing together is bouldering, which is super fun and active.
That's such a good game.
Yeah. Mm. So just like going to the bouldering gym and climbing. And what I've realized about bouldering and climbing in general is that it appeals to a particular kind of person who wants the physical side of it, but also likes the kind of puzzle solving element that there is to it. And like having to lie on the crash pads and go, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to try this time, and kind of working on these projects. And so I've been looking for a sport that I could do with my kids for a while. And they're not the sportiest human beings alive. And bouldering is the perfect fit. So they're very into that now. So we're doing a lot of that together, but not as much video gaming as we used to.
But I mean, I think all of these things are, you know, these are all great examples of games, right? And I think that the kind of the thing I have been reflecting on why Hearthstone, kind of playing Hearthstone with you, it shifted in my head from being a fun, joyful game to being, you know, something that I felt responsible for doing. I've been thinking about kind of how powerful it can be to think about the reverse of that. So framing things that you have to do as fun in your brain, not in a way that's, you know, kind of, you know, silly, like, oh, you know, like if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life. But kind of in more meaningful ways. So, you know, it's kind of that time of the year, it's January 10th, where, you know, I think a lot of people, for example, are thinking about how to get fit or how to get stronger, or, you know, keep their stupid telomeres long and their stupid heart breathing. and, you know, a lot of this feels like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have to punish myself for like all the fun I've been having over December. And I really am going to have to give up all the fun and really knuckle down and do a fitness routine and whatever. And, you know, flipping that around and being like, well, what would this look like if it was just play, if it was just joyful? And, you know, what does it look like to half-ass this in a way that is still fun and rather pick up bouldering, you know, with my kids? Yeah. You're just way more likely to, A, enjoy that, B, stick to it probably.
Absolutely. Because I'm not a gym person. Like, I cannot go to the gym and stand and do the same goddamn thing 60 times in a row. Like, it destroys my spirit. And so running is the one thing I found that works for cardio, because I think you need one of each, right? Like you need something cardio, so swimming or running or cycling, something that gets your heart rate up and keeps it up for a while. And thank God I found running, because that's the thing for me. I listen to my podcasts, I zone out, I run, I say no to all invitations to running groups, do not like group activities, leave me alone doing my thing. That's cool. But then you also need like the basically muscle building kind of, you know, just and which we're increasingly learning is super important, especially as you start getting older. So I was looking for that sport, and going to the gym and lifting weights, just like, fuck no, never. But turns out bouldering way more efficient at building muscles, 1,000 times more fun. The geeks that hang out at the bouldering gym listen to my music, speak my language, like knows like in that place. And so I just love hanging out with the dorks at the bouldering gym and like climbing a wall. And thank God for Kenny, because he drags me, our friend Kenneth, who drags me into all of these fantastic activities. So now I feel like I've got those two physical sides of the coin ticked. But just what you were saying before, it's interesting that dynamic of, and then this is something that our friend Kenny and I have been speaking about a lot, is why games are fun in a way that work isn't, you know? Because quintessentially, you're sitting down, you're doing something, it's a project that needs to be completed, there are rules you have to obey, but there's something about it being inconsequential that makes it fun in a way that work or, you know, therapy or relationships or all the other things that we have to do are not always fun. And it's like, there is no reward. Like, you know, I beat you at a game, or we beat the game. Fat whoop, nothing has changed in the world. No spreadsheet has passed the desk that has caused the button to be pushed and money to move or whatever. Like, you know, but something about that makes it so appealing. Whereas the things that do matter, and where we do get tangible actual rewards in the real world that we can put in our mouths, like, that's stuff we don't want to do. And it turns out that gamifying work doesn't help either. I feel like that was the wave 10 years ago, was like, oh, let's turn everything into a game. Let's make apps that make your running feel like you're being chased like zombies. And let's make a to-do list app that makes it feel like you're building a D&D character when you're making spreadsheets. Yeah. And like, all of that shit just fell on its face, because it's like, no, fuck off with that. Don't put my games in my work. Don't put my work in my games. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is, we're a curious species.
Totally. But I think you're picking at something that's really insightful there, which is about risk being, I think, the difference. So I think the thing is, with a game, you can take risks because failure is fine. You know, there are no kind of long-term consequences to failure. So therefore, you can kind of throw yourself at the next bouldering hold, because you might miss it and you might fall, and that's fine. There's a crash mat. It's okay. And in fact, you have to do that. Like, you have to send your character into the dungeon, and then he might die, and that's fine. Unlike in the world, where actually racing at a big hairy monster with an axe, probably not a great idea, because you might die. But the consequences,
take it from me, kids. Sam knows all about this activity. Do not go into games with big monsters wielding axes. It ends bad.
No. Oh, yeah, that time I got cracked up by an axe.
To go back to your question, I've been playing Hearthstone, I've been bouldering, I've been running. I've started playing Go. There's a fantastic story, which I wouldn't feel is fair telling, about our friend Kenny and his amazing new Go set. But I'll leave him to tell you that one in person, because it's an incredible story. But anyway, as you know, Go, the ancient Chinese and then Japanese game, I feel like it's way more popular in Japan, but originally it's from China, where you capture territory on a board. Super simple, super complicated. Anybody listening to this on the internet, because they're so fucking smart, will know about AlphaGo and Google developing an AI that beat it. But that took a very long time, because unlike chess, Go is like, you know, way more complicated, way more kind of possible moves on the board, etc. So I've been enjoying getting into the world of Go and learning a super complicated game. And then like trying to find more opportunities for board games as well, because there are so many great board games. So one we tried, actually, the list of games we did try and play online as part of your challenge was Small World. And what's cool is, we were playing the digital version, which is available on everything like Steam, iOS, etc. And what's cool about that is, Small World is originally a physical board game that's really laborious to play, because there's so many pieces and there's so many things that you have to track, and like different rules for different races as you're capturing parts of this map. And I kind of bought Small World ages ago and never played it, because it took like an hour to unpack and set up, and then the rules and it just felt like labor. But when you got it on the PC, it's the exact same game. It looks the same. The pieces are the same. but you've got the computer worrying about setting it up and tracking all the rules, and you can just have fun playing it. So I really enjoy digitized board games for that reason, because it's all the joy of the board game. Plus, you get to play with your friends online, even if they're on the other side of the planet. And the computer just kind of tracks all the rules and does all the math and all the difficult stuff that you'd have to otherwise do. So
and you don't need a huge dining room table worth of like 7,000 tiny little pieces. I'll be honest, that's my favorite part of board games. It's just
no, for sure. And there's a delight in that as well. But like some games, like the Game of Thrones board game is incredible, but a session takes like 8 hours and there's so much to track, et cetera. Yeah. Whereas the digital version of that is amazing. And way more accessible. And because you need quite a lot of people to play it, you can just coordinate a group online and spend a Sunday evening playing Game of Thrones and having a fantastic time turning your friends into mortal enemies.
Yeah, that is a great game. I love Game of Thrones. I'm curious to come back to Go, though, because I love this for you, getting into Go. So my perception of Go, is this true, is that what's interesting about it is that it's faster to learn than chess, for example, because all the pieces kind of act in the same way, but much, much harder to master.
Yes.
Is that true?
That's pretty much it. The rule set isn't super complicated. There are some strange things. So you can get stuck into a loop, which is illegal, where you basically take your opponent's piece and then they take yours back and then you take theirs back and blah, blah, blah. It's super easy rule, but it's kind of, and once you know it, it's obvious. And again, I must like emphasize, I am in the tutorial stage. Like, I'm not just a beginner, I'm like halfway through tutorial beginner. Like, so I know nothing about Go except for the very basic rule set. But yeah, I think that's one of the things that makes it appealing. You know, on the one side of the why can't I think of this word today? The thing. And the spectrum of difficulty. God damn it, Sam, my brain. Anyway, you've got like on the one side of the gaming spectrum, you've got full-on gambling. Like push a button, these things will spin. Result has nothing to do with you and maybe you'll win or not. And then on the other side of the spectrum is like full-on skill. Like, and on that side of the board, you've got like chess, Go, Dota, you know, things that are 100% skill. And there have been studies about this, and I'm not sure that they mean anything, but human beings kind of like the things that are in the middle. Like, you want a little bit of random luck thrown in there to make you feel special. But you also want to feel like you did it. Like, no. I wasn't just lucky. I was also fucking smart. And like, I saw that shit that Sam didn't see, and that's why I beat her ass and she got killed by an axe wielding monster. But like, it's interesting to like play around with that spectrum, because Hearthstone Battlegrounds is like, you know, it's very much on the gambling side. Like, there's a little bit of skill involved in getting to know the races and making the right decisions. So it's a decision-making game, but there's a lot of gambling and dice rolling in the background. Whereas Go is 100% on the other side. Like, there's very little luck in Go. The luck is like your partner's you know, fucking up, basically.
And it's interesting to me that we think of both of those things as games, right? Because I think that one of the reasons we like luck in games is because it helps the game be more sociable, because it balances it out, right? So it's very demotivating to play a game against someone who's so much better than you if there's no luck involved, because they're just obviously going to beat you. Yeah. But in that kind of game, the randomness gives you a chance often. And like what game designers often thinking about when they create a game is, how can the game have mechanisms to rebalance if someone has fallen too far behind? Because it's like a game like Monopoly is a great example of a badly balanced game, where if you start losing Monopoly early on, it's this long, slow slog to death for you. Yeah. Like, you can never actually catch up, but it takes ages for you to actually die, and it's just awful. It's an awful feeling. So I think that's why we like luck in games, right? Is because it means that I can play a five-year-old and the five-year-old might beat me.
Yeah. Although Monopoly is a game that wasn't designed to ever be played, and we won't go into the history here, because it's a fascinating story that's been told a million times. And in fact, there's a fantastic Planet Money podcast episode about Monopoly and its history, which I encourage anybody who doesn't know the fascinating history of Monopoly to go and listen to. But getting back to, so there's also the idea of handicaps, right? And that's something that I don't think goes into enough of game design or sport, is like, if you're really good at something and you still want to have fun with your friend who's a novice, what can you do to kind of, you know, handicap yourself so that this is still fun for both of you?
Yeah.
it's still a challenge for you and it's still engaging for them. And it's weird that the biggest douche sport of all, which is golf, kind of had this installed from the beginning, this idea of handicaps. Like, if you're not as good as I am, like, we're basically going to weight our scores according to a handicap so that we can still have a game.
Yeah.
And there's still, you know, you still have an opportunity to get somewhere. I don't know how the rules of golf work, but I assume that's what handicaps
mean. I assume so. I mean, it's interesting because that's also the interesting thing about play as a ground for learning, right? Because like, this is something that I think about a lot in my creative writing classes that I'm now running, which has been one of the kind of most joyful parts of 2023 for me, was one of the most joyful parts of 2023 for me. Is, you know, I run this writing workshop, and one of the things that I find myself often doing is, like, for example, I had a student last semester who is just so good at similes. Like, she just comes up with the most vivid, odd, surprising, you know, in her sentences, she's like, oh, it was like a whatever. And that just, they're wonderful. Like, each one is great. You know, but then with her, I basically forbade her from using them for a few exercises. I was like, this is a skill you have. You've mastered the skill. I want you to try and not doing that. Like, don't allow yourself to go there, use that thing, because I want you to develop other tools, you know, in your descriptive, your ability to describe things. And I think it was really tough for those couple of weeks. But, you know, she was then producing some incredibly vivid metaphors, you know, and kind of totally different, like focusing on stronger verbs and you know, kind of rounding out her skill set a little bit. You know, and I think that games, like, yeah, like we play as tiny baby animals, like all animals play because that's how we learn. And, you know, you're trying something in a safe, you need the kind of safe space where failure is fine.
But there's also something about imposing handicaps on yourself as a way to improve your skills. You know, like the old play with a metal table tennis racket. And after 1,000 games of that, when you pick up the light wooden one, you will be a golden god of ping pong.
Yeah. Or like Mr. Miyagi making you wash the windscreen.
Something we don't do enough in work. It's like, I'm going to remove the tab buttons from your keyboard and let's see you make spreadsheets as fast as the interns now, John.
Oh, it's funny.
I'm going to think about carry on.
No, it's just, it is interesting for me about, like, the fact that, you know, people pick up Go rather than saying, you know, I'm gonna invest that time learning how to build spreadsheets better, you know. And Go is fun, and learning spreadsheets, I mean, it's fun for me, but I'm a crazy person. But, you know, for most people, it's
fun. Yeah, you know, I poke a lot of fun at people who make spreadsheets, but I become one of them, and I don't hate it. I'm super cuck at it. You are an absolute wizard. And thankfully, so is Kenny, who works with me, unfortunately for him. But I'm super cuck at it. But it is oh my God, have you been watching the Excel tournaments? I don't know what it's called.
No.
Competitive
Excel.
There's
an Excel? What?
Oh, this is
canceling my evening plans.
This is a big thing. And the World Championships were recently. I know nothing about this sport either. Obviously, it's sponsored by Microsoft. They have commentators, they have audiences,
oh,
they have spreadsheets on big screens, they have trophies.
That's amazing.
This might be just the thing for you, Sammy.
It might be. But I mean, that's a great example of, how can you make something fun?
Excel World Championships. Okay. It's a vibe.
Definitely.
Go and watch some of the championships on YouTube. It's worth your time.
So,
and what's amazing is the commentators will be watching somebody, like, you know, apply these formulas and going, oh my God, oh my God, DZ, oh, he did it, he, I caught it. And it's you know, it's like you're watching fucking mixed martial arts, except, you know,
magic.
It's some dude
I'm
called
in.
Tyrone, who's super good at math.
Go Tyrone. Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love humans. I love the internet.
Me too.
There's such good garbage on there.
Oh, man. All right, buddy, I think it's your time to challenge me, he says.
Hey, so I have a challenge for you. And I hope that it's a joyful one. So I have been thinking a lot recently about extinction, very kind of lighthearted, fun topic, and the extinction we are living through.
Are you going to challenge me to go extinct?
Yeah, I'm going to challenge you to go extinct and report back. from the void. No, so my challenge to you is an observational one, which is I want you to go out into nature. It could be the lovely mountain that you live very close to. It could be the ocean. It could be any kind of place where there's a lot of nature. I want you to have a look around and I want you to find a species of plant or animal, or it could be a bug, it could be a whatever, that you have never noticed before. Like, it's new to you. And I want you to discover that species for yourself. So what I want you to do is spend as long as you can, at least like 10 minutes, observing it in some kind of way. So that could be drawing it, that could be taking photographs, that could be writing a poem about it. And I also want you to name the species. And then, yeah, next time we chat, I want you to describe it to me as, okay, you know, present your findings of this new species that you've discovered for you.
I will invoke my inner Charles Darwin. And I will set forth into nature on my voyage of discovery.
Go forth and discover a species. This might be a fun one to follow along at home if anyone happens to find this conversation on the internet. If you want to go and discover a species. It's new to you, right? Yeah.
And then hit us up on fuck Twitter, that's not happening anymore. X.
No, I'm whatever. I'm doing Blue Sky kind of and Instagram, I think.
Don't get me started. This is a discussion for another episode. I'm still on X. Because, you know, like it's like a train crash. I just can't look away. I have found though that there's a gaping hole in my social media that Twitter used to fulfill, which is breaking news. Like, I remember finding out about Michael Jackson's death, for example, is a very bad example, like before any of the news channels were talking about it or whatever. And obviously it wasn't always reliable breaking news, like, you know, the 500 stories about Steve Jobs dying before he actually did, etc. But I find that as a news hound and somebody who loves current affairs, Twitter was amazing for breaking news. That's just not happening anymore. Somebody who I follow on Twitter when I was lamenting this, Nahama Brody, who's an incredible author, journalist.
Oh, so like, good.
Yeah, go and look up Nahama if you haven't. She's incredible.
And novelist.
Yeah, just too many things to mention, which is why I shouldn't ever do an introduction for her. But she was saying that she's got a lot of really good news websites and apps that she's curated that are filling that void for her. So maybe that's what I need to look into. But I've been playing around with Threads. I've been playing around with Blue Sky, which has been a massive fail for me. Mastodon. Etc. And they're all good for different things. I have a preference for anything open source, open networking. So I would tend more towards a Mastodon than a Blue Sky because it's more open and Fediverse goodness, etc. I get no attention on these platforms, so that sucks. There's like no engagement, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But the other thing that none of them are replicated yet is that breaking news thing. And I think Threads is closest at the moment. And my hypothesis is that a lot of journalists have fled Twitter, X, whatever, Elon's hellhole. And that seems to be one of the platforms they've gravitated towards because, you know, birds of a feather or whatever. But there seems to be a lot of journalism on Threads that I'm not seeing on these other platforms, and that's cool. I think thanks to Elon, I'm kind of, my social media addiction has been broken. Like, I just don't give a fuck anymore.
It's kind of great. Yeah, it's kind of great. I have had to uninstall TikTok because, hot damn, it was very effective at addicting me. I had to uninstall it. I uninstalled Instagram for a long time. I've recently reinstalled it because one of the goals I have for this year is I want to take more photos of my life because I took basically no photos of my life last year. It's nice to kind of post them. But then the problem is I really want a post-only Instagram app where you can go on there, you can post, and you can engage with like people that you
– There is one.
I don't know, a small group of people, but you can't get stuck into essentially TikTok.
Instagram, because you can pick it up, you can post, and you can put it down. No, although
that requires self-control I do not have.
Instagram does now have this thing in story mode where you can choose to share with only particular people, like close friends or something. My love-hate with – actually, it's just hate-hate with Instagram began 2 years ago where somebody cloned my account. So I stopped using Instagram ages ago because fuck Meta and Facebook and like I cannot for them. But I kept my account active because I was scared of this exact thing happening, which is somebody pretending to be me and then trying to scam people. So guess what happened? Somebody cloned my account, changed the I in Simon to a one, and then started friending all my friends. And because I wasn't active on Instagram, friends of mine would look for me on Instagram and other people and think that that was me. And so this account had more followers than I did, had cloned of my copy, all of my images, everything, 100% cloned my account, and then started DMing people, moving them off onto WhatsApp and scamming them, whoever this fucknut is. And then I started getting messages from friends going, like, why would you send me this message? That's so messed up, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, guys, that's not me. So anyway, I go and I reactivate Instagram. What these people do is after they've cloned your account, they block you. So if I'm logged into Instagram, I can't see they exist. I can't find them. I can't engage with them. It's pernicious as hell. So anyway, so I make a different Instagram account. I report this account and I start telling all my friends. So they start reporting this account. There's an issue with this account. It's spam. It's whatever. Hundreds of reports. Do you think Meta has done anything about it?
No, absolutely not. Of course not.
I was speaking to our friend John O'Nolan at Ghost. Like, the official Ghost account got hacked. He knows people who know people at Meta, very senior, has not been able to resolve the issue. So I'm like tearing my hair out because my idiot friends who think this person who starts their WhatsApp messages with my brother in Christ is somehow me. And I'm like, guys, how fucking stupid are you, firstly? But secondly, like, no, surprise, surprise, that's not actually me. And I'm just trying to put out fires left and right, posting my own content to try and see if that helps the situation. And there are more than one cloned accounts. Like, this has happened to me many times on many platforms, but this time just got out of control. Can't do anything about it. Meta doesn't answer any emails. They don't reply to any reports. So what do? They go, hey, guys, you know these little blue verified ticks on Instagram that we gave to fucking Snoop Dogg and Mark Zuckerberg? You can have one too if you pay us, whatever, $20 a month or whatever.
No.
So I'm like, shit. This is really the only solution to the problem. It's not a solution, but it's some way. It's for me to actually pay these motherfuckers to put a blue tick next to my name so that at least people can see when they look for me which account is the real me. So I'm like, well done, Mark Zuckerberg. You get to claim 5 users instead of 1. Ignore all of the reports about the spam and people actually losing money. Continue to run ads for goddamn fake games and gambling sites and then get me to pay you $20 a month for an app I hate and do not want to use. So having gone through all of this, now I'm like, you know what? Fine. Mea culpa. No, not mea culpa. Whatever the other one is. You win, Mark Zuckerberg. You got me. I'll post to Instagram and pretend to fucking love it because what else am I going to do now?
Christ. What a nightmare. What an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. And it would have, the irony is it would have been worse if I just deleted my account because then somebody would have been able to take my actual name.
Yeah.
So he's just got you snookered, man. Can't delete your account.
Yeah.
Can't ignore your account. Can't file any reports. You cannot do anything. What you can do is comply and play the game. Ugh, makes me so angry.
Well, he somehow needs to pay for all those Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes, you know?
Yeah.
Poor Zuck. That poor guy, you know?
Yeah, poor billionaires. Shame. You know, they don't actually have the money, Sam. It's shares in their company.
It's
not
shares.
Like they can leverage it to buy a boat that costs the same as a planet.
No, they're basically just like you and I, really. Except that people are so mean to them. It's a real hardship.
Yeah, shame. They need weird nerds to defend them on the internet, these poor people.
Which actually, so getting to the last segment of our podcast, which is like a random recommendation. Probably the best book that I read in 2023 was Naomi Alderman's new novel, The Future. I am telling everyone about it. It is so good. So okay. Naomi Alderman wrote The Power, which is this wonderful novel from about, I think, like 10 years ago now, which imagines that a world where women are able to shoot electricity from their hands, basically. And so what does the world look like where women have physical dominant power, and how does that upend everything? The new novel, The Future, fantastic, imagines what if the lightly fictionalized versions of Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Bezos, etc., all get stranded together on an island in a kind of civilization catastrophe moment. And it is so deeply funny and insightful and thoughtful and brilliant and layered. It is just the best novel that I read in 2023. And it's so cathartic as well.
Maybe then Elon and Mark would be forced to actually fight and both die.
Well, exactly.
In a dual chokehold. That would be amazing.
Don't you want to read that novel? Yes, yeah. You do.
So the best book I read last year is called The Girls of Little Hope. It's by these authors named Sam Beck-Bessinger and Dale Halverson. And if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. I'm not going to tell you anything about it because there's so many surprises.
Ah, that's so sweet.
We haven't discussed this on the show yet, have we? It's been that long.
Oh, we haven't, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I brought out a book this year. 13th
birthday the last time we recorded a podcast. Sam's a novelist,
yeah,
guys.
Finally, yeah. And I am at the moment finishing the edits on novel 2. So,
nice.
Yay.
ETA?
Yeah. No idea. We're going to try and sell it first. We haven't got a publisher for it yet. So,
Who's we? Are you writing with Dale again or is it?
No. This is solo. Me and my agent.
When you and your agent.
This is me and my agent.
Sam's first solo novel.
Yeah, exciting.
That is exciting.
What other lovely things have you encountered recently, Si?
Oh, I feel like I've covered just about all of them in the show. Bouldering, Go. Besides for your book, I haven't read a whole hell of a lot. I've just been catching up on Podcast Land, which has been amazing. Mm. I did listen to a incredible Radiolab episode, which I think I shared with you, about the interstition.
Uh-huh.
Turns out, for anybody listening to this who didn't know, you have not only an organ, but an entire system in your body that accounts for more weight than your blood or more volume than your blood that scientists knew nothing about until like 8 years ago. What the fuck exactly? Go listen to this episode of Radiolab. It's called The Interstitium. It will blow your mind.
So good.
And it's just such a great example of like, we know nothing.
Love stories like that. Have there been any other good new podcasts that you've subscribed to?
I've gotten very kind of stale
in my podcast habits. Mm.
I love Acquired, which basically looks at different companies in real depth. In fact, I can't believe they give this content away for free. The episode on Nike is something like 4 hours long. And I'm I love the Nike story. Like I've read Shoe Dog, which is one of the best business books I've ever read. There aren't many of those. There may be three. I've read thousands. There are three good ones. Shoe Dog is one by Phil Knight. So I'd read the book by the founder of Nike. I'd watched the Air movie, which, you know, is fiction, but kind of there and was interesting, you know, with how they signed Michael Jordan, etc. So I thought I knew the Nike story, but oh my God, I listened to this episode of Acquired on Nike and was just like, fucking hell, these guys are great. They did the last interview ever with Charlie Munger before he passed away. They had an interview with Jensen Huang from NVIDIA, which was incredible. So I've really been enjoying Acquired. Cautionary Tales, which has been around for ages, but I only recently subscribed to it. Fantastic podcast. I think you'd love Cautionary Tales. It's super good. Obviously, being a crypto geek, I listen to a whole lot of blockchain podcasts that probably wouldn't interest anyone else, but you know, I do the Bankless, Lightspeed, Unchained. There are a lot of great crypto podcasts that I listen to with glee. Mm. Sure, what else? Radiolab, always great. It's a bit hit and miss. They play a lot of reruns, which is fine. Although I've listened to all those episodes 1,000 times, so I tend to skip them. But every now and then they'll break out with something like The Interstitium, which is just incredible. Like Radiolab to me is still the gold standard. And also, not just for podcasting, but for investigative journalism, like there's unfortunately a lot of what makes great journalism great, I feel like, is a dying art. And again, unfortunately, because the world needs it more than ever. But Radiolab just upholds those standards, you know, correcting themselves, thoroughly fact-checking things, you know, actually speaking to real experts, not just people with opinions. It's fantastic. So
it's so good.
Could also always just re-listen to Radiolab.
Yeah, totally. And also just as storytellers, right? Like how they manage to weave, always like anchor something mm-hmm. in a very specific story and then draw kind of or extrapolate larger insights yeah. from those stories. They do that really elegantly.
And then two more I'll mention since we're on it. Search Engine with PJ Vogue. Incredible. You'd love Search Engine, Sam. Please go and listen to Search Engine.
What's the vibe?
PJ Vogue answering questions he's come up with, but in a really decisive, great. In-depth way. It's brilliant. And the questions range from, am I being poisoned by my local sushi restaurant, to why do drug dealers put so much opioids in everything? And it's brilliant. And PJ Vogue is a sweetheart and amazing. And then the final one I'll mention, Perennial, it's old, but it's still on all the feeds, is Shit Town, which is still, I think, the best podcast series I've ever listened to. If you've never listened to Shit Town, every now and then I'll just break it out again and listen to it and go, my God, why can't we make more content like this?
Yeah. Where are we? We need better funding models for this kind of thing, I think, is the problem. But yes,
and as I recently discovered when I was recommending it to a friend, you have to look for S-Town. Like you can't search for Shit Town on most Spotify or most podcatchers.
What podcast app are you using these days? Because Google Podcasts is shutting down because Google wants me to suffer and loves killing all my favorite products.
So my favorite was Overcast, which I don't often recommend because it's iOS only, but it's just an incredibly good podcatcher. But lately, I almost hate to admit it, like Spotify's just taken over because...
Okay.
And it's because their apps are so good. So one of the things I found really difficult was I love listening to podcasts while I run, and I like leaving my phone at home when I run, which means I only have my watch. Mm-hmm. And on the Apple Watch, the Spotify app is amazing, and it'll even stream if you've got the cellular version of the Apple Watch. And so I can be a lazy asshole and not pay any attention to, you know, what podcast episodes I want to listen to, whatever. Putting my AirPods in the morning, go for a run, and just before I do, open up Spotify. Oh, there's a new episode of whatever. Listen to this. It'll stream it while I'm running. And so because there just isn't – actually, Apple Podcasts does that pretty well too. But Spotify is – you know, it works on my Google Home speakers. None of the Apple apps do. It just – Spotify has nailed their players so well that the fact that they're turning even into an evil empire of paying musicians and content creators nothing and people like Joe Rogan hundreds of millions of dollars to be exclusively on their platform, that all is just melting away into me going, you know what? Well done on the player, guys. I can listen to my podcast while I run. Thank you. Da-da-da-da-da. I get to naively watch the world. Give more money to evil empires.
We're all the problems, I...
On that note, Sammy.
This was fun. We should do this more often.
Oh, shut
I know
up.
We've never said this.
Yeah. Thanks for my challenge. I'll speak to you on Mars in 2050 when we circle back. I'll have discovered a species that hasn't evolved yet.
Perfect. Anyway, I love you and your dumb face.
I love you too. Goodbye, Sam. Thank you.